On Manage Your Money God's Way, we're going to start the show with solutions for people that struggle with money. And you have to agree that a majority of us do struggle at times. Plus, a book written by John and Evelyn called God, Marriage, and Money. It's a must-read for engaged couples. The book is intended to begin a discussion so each of you know and understand when it comes to money in the marriage. That's Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry, Saturday mornings at 9 Eastern and Sunday afternoons at 5 Eastern on Breadbox Media. Welcome to Manage Your Money God's Way. We're from Compass Catholic Ministry. Now, our ministry is all about showing you through Scripture how God intends for us to handle money. We've got a great Bible study that takes you through that. It's called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. It's a 9-week small group study. You can check it out by going to CompassCatholic.org and click on Bible Studies. Interesting article that we came across on a website called Simple Stewart that asked the question, do you struggle with money? And we thought this would be an excellent topic to discuss, since the answer from a majority of us is yes. Now, John and Evelyn Bean, who are the co-founders of Compass Catholic, join me in the studio today. And John, how do you begin to answer that question about struggling with money? You and Evelyn have gone through the struggles.
Well, Steve, you know, when it comes to managing our money, Americans have plenty of room for improvement. Yeah, we're the richest country in the world and all that good stuff. But you know what? Most people still struggle financially to some extent. You know, either we're mired in debt, or we can't improve our incomes to make a little bit more money, or we have trouble budgeting for the things that we really want in life.
You know, we hear from so many people that are struggling with one of these things, and it just seems like it's so prevalent everywhere. And it seems like struggling with money is just a typical part of American life, but I don't understand why.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to pinpoint the root cause of some of our issues. Some of them are not quite so hard, but the fact remains is that the vast number of us could do a lot better. We could all stand to save more money and therefore invest more money. And everybody acts like credit is some long lost friend that they keep using over and over and over again.
To that, I would add, we could all do a better job of tracking what we're actually spending. I think that's where a lot of people get off track, is by just spending without knowing where the money's going.
I saw something just yesterday in an article in the USA Today, and it was talking about things you don't need to do anymore. It says you don't need to balance your checkbook anymore, you don't need to track anymore. But it was all predicated on the fact that you're using some kind of electronic system that does all that for you.
Yeah, but even if you have an electronic system that does all that for you, if you're not paying attention to it, it doesn't do you any
precisely,
good.
Precisely. And if you're spending cash, it doesn't track that cash either. So how bad is a problem that we have here in the United States?
It's bad, John.
Well, I think before you can improve something, you got to figure out, where do you stand today? How do you handle your money today? And here are the numbers that show how Americans continue to struggle with money in nearly, you know, pretty much every aspect of their lives. And we should keep in mind a verse from Hebrews 13:5. It says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be satisfied with what you have. And I think that pretty much boils down the root of the problem, because I think we are in love with money.
We're not putting money in the proper perspective.
Precisely.
Yeah,
precisely.
It's a tool to use. It's not, well, not a measure of our worth.
Yes. Yes, yes. So the first number is $16,048. And you know what that represents?
I would assume it's credit card debt, but that seems like a bigger number than we were quoting last year. It went up about $1,000.
And credit card debt is going up, up, up. It's not getting any better. The average American household with credit card debt, and that's an important caveat, because some households, and we know of two right here, who don't have any credit card
those
debt.
Those of us in the studio? Way to go, Steve!
But the balance of people who have credit card debt, on the average, is a whopping $16,048. 38% of households do carry credit card debt of some fashion. And really, that's pretty good, because what that's saying is that 62% don't have any credit card debt. So that would say, you know, over half.
That sounds like a positive.
It's a positive thing. The problem is we still got 38% who struggle. To me, 38% seems...
It's more than a third.
Yeah.
And when we say credit card debt, that's a balance that doesn't get paid off from month to month. That's not using your credit card and paying it off at the end of the month. It's using your credit card and then keep running that balance up and only making the minimum payment, so you don't have... you don't have the opportunity to pay it off in full.
Right, right. And the other interesting fact that came out of that was that those families that have an average net worth of zero are carrying an average of over $10,000 of credit card debt.
So that doesn't really say they have an average net worth of zero. They have an average net worth of minus $10,000, right?
Well, that would be counted in. Credit cards are just tools.
Just like money's a tool.
And as the case of most tools, the results reflect the skill of the user. In other words, if you're painting a picture, your skill with a paintbrush determines the quality of the picture.
So being skilled in using credit cards doesn't mean I'm using it a lot. What does being skilled with credit cards mean?
Well, if you have great skill, you have no debt.
So I'm using the credit card wisely.
Wisely. You know, if you have a lesser amount of skill, then maybe you have a little bit of debt. And if you have no skill, then I guess you've got a lot of debt. While the credit cards can be valuable tools, the numbers show that they can still be a really destructive force.
Yeah, a lot of people just accept the fact that they're in credit card debt, and they never sit down and figure out what that interest they're paying every month really does to the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think they just don't sit down and think about it at all.
Yep.
You know, they worry about how to pay it off, but they don't stop using it.
Right.
And that's an issue. And, you know, in Proverbs 22:7, where we learn that the rich rule over the poor and the borrower is slave to the lender. And so we can see that people who have constant credit card debt month after month after month after month, they really are enslaved to those credit card companies who keep giving them debt. I saw a posting on Facebook this morning, and the fella said that he'd been so good in handling his credit, the credit card company bumped him up $10,000.
Oh, gee. Wow, I've gotten into a lot of debt, so they're going to give me the opportunity to get into more. Doesn't sound like a good deal to me.
No, he said he'd been so good in using it because he didn't have any.
Oh, okay.
They increased his debt line.
Oh, I thought it was because he went into so much debt they gave him more to get into. You know, it's easy to get in there, though. You're in the store, your children want something, you need something for school, you need something for the house, or you think you need it, you want it, and you've got that little piece of plastic in your purse or your pocket, and it's just real easy to whip it out and get whatever you want.
So we talked about skilled credit card users and unskilled credit card users, and you know, when you think from a sports perspective, how do you get better at something?
You practice.
You practice more and more and more. Now, I'm not saying you should be using your credit card more and more and more and more. Please don't understand that.
I thought you were going to let me go shopping after we do the show. Not so, huh?
But I think one of the things that you can do is don't use your card.
So practice abstinence.
Abstinence. There you go. Get those bills paid off. And then once you've got your credit card balance down to zero, then use it a little bit.
Wisely.
Wisely, and make sure that it's paid off at the end of every single month. And the first month that you can't pay it off,
use one of our three strategies.
Cut it up.
Cut it up. Put it in the oven or freeze it.
Yeah. So another one of the numbers is $5,000.
And what does $5,000 represent?
The median average working couple.
So working age is what, like 30s, 40s?
Probably, no, I would say starting at probably 25.
Okay.
Okay, 25 to 65. But I think they're focused on younger people here. Only had $5,000 stashed away in a retirement account as of 2013. That's the last available data that the Federal Reserve had.
So that's not bad if somebody's like in their early 20s and at least they have 5,000. But if
if
they're on the back end of that number,
this
really
is the average. Yeah. Okay, 43% of couples, almost half, have no money set aside
for retirement.
For retirement, yeah,
that's scary.
That is scary. Now there some people blame the move away from the companies have had moving away from defined benefit plans like used to exist 30 years ago towards individual retirement savings and that type of thing.
But a lot of companies will encourage people to use an individual retirement account, and they will match funds, and that's something people should very much take advantage of.
And that's different from a defined benefit plan. So,
right.
You know, and the economic downturns that we've had has played an effect on some of that because people had to spend what they had saved. But, you know, it still remains that there's not too many people that are prepared. One of the things that I wanted to focus on is if you're planning just to live on Social Security, or if you haven't even really thought about where your money's going to come from when you retire, the average Social Security check today is $1,180 a month.
So what is that in a year?
That's $14,160 a year.
So how much is that I get to live on per month?
Well, you would get that much per month, but you know, if you figure your average rent is going to be $800 or $900,
yeah,
come out at $1,100, that leaves you with about $300 left over for food, transportation, insurance, vacation, clothing,
medical, dental, eye care,
cable, utilities,
all that kind of stuff.
Oh, cell phone, yeah. That's $300 isn't going to go very far.
So, Social Security was designed not to replace your salary, but to supplement your retirement income.
So if I'm earning like $50,000 a year today and my Social Security is $14,000, I'm really missing a lot of my income when I retire.
Absolutely.
Struggling with money, and we just got into retirement, so what do you do if you're in your 40s or 50s and have not made an effort to save? We're going to walk you through that challenge next. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
And welcome back to Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry. And when I say we, I'm including the co-founders of the ministry, John and Evelyn Bean. Now, today's topic is, do you struggle with money? And before the break, we began a discussion about retirement. And John, throughout a number, the average Social Security check is $1,180 a month. That's $14,000 and change over the course of a year. Can you live on that alone? I think you already know the answer to that question. So, John, what about some other numbers?
Okay, another number that we want to focus on is $17,000.
Okay, so what's $17,000?
The $5,000 was focused on couples up to their mid-50s, probably. $17,000 is focused on couples who are in their late 50s and early 60s. They've only saved $17,000 for retirement.
Okay, so let's step back for a minute, because if you take the average Social Security payment, which is $14,000 per year, and you add $17,000, that means they have $32,000 to live on.
That would use all their savings the first year.
That is frightening.
Young couples, they can begin saving now and be able to accumulate a larger number. These couples that are in their late 50s, early 60s, their time's about up.
They're running smack into a brick wall called retirement.
No, they're not going to know what retirement is.
That's true. They'll have to work forever.
They're going to have to keep on working.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just ugliness. So what's a person supposed to do?
Number one, track your spending.
Track your spending. Pay off all your debt as soon as possible. Begin saving today. Think about where you're spending your money and where can you cut to increase your savings?
Yeah, a lot of people think that they're going to get to this certain point in life where it's going to be time to save. And that never happens because you can always find ways to spend money.
Absolutely.
So the key is to start with a small amount and then start gradually increasing it to kind of lessen the pain on saving. But you have to start at some point with something, even if it's only $20.
Well, you know, if you're 30 years old today and you started saving $100 a month, at 7%. Now you're saying, where am I going to get 7%? But if you invest in mutual funds and something like that, your average is going to be pretty close to 7%. If you did that until age 65, so 35 years of $100 a month would net you at 65 just over $180,000.
And that sounds like a really big number, unless you consider that you might need $30,000 a year to supplement your Social Security income. In which case, your savings is only going to last for about 6 years.
So if I retire at 65 and
have 180,000,
you know, my when do I need to die date is 71.
Yep.
That sounds pretty ugly. You know, another number is $75,000.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Wow. It says that there's a lot of families out there who are earning $75,000. Who are still living hand to mouth.
They just barely squeak by.
They just barely squeak by. They got no savings. They probably have credit card debt. But we experienced that. We were in that boat. We were earning pretty close to that amount of money.
And that was a long time ago.
And that was a long time ago.
$175,000 went a lot further.
It went a lot further. But, you know, we ended up $250,000 in debt.
Mm-hmm. And that was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, not so much. Of the people who earn $75,000 a year or more, a third of them were hand-to-mouth. That number has soared. That was a couple of years ago. It's up to maybe close to 70% now.
Among millennials.
Yep, yep.
So 71% of the millennials making $75,000 can't make ends meet.
Yeah. And you know what they blamed it on? Lifestyle purchases.
So in other words, I want the new clothes, I want the car, I want the tech gadgets, I want everything I see.
They're living the materialistic world.
So this is not food, clothing, and shelter. This is above and beyond.
Absolutely.
What basic needs are.
Lifestyle wants.
Okay.
Not lifestyle needs.
Kind of reminds you of that verse from Philippians, doesn't it?
It does.
This is Philippians 4:11-13. For I have learned to be content in any and all circumstances. I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and want. I can do all things through him who strengthens me.
That pretty much says it.
Unfortunately, that's not how most people think.
That's true. Why?
Discipline.
Why? Discipline. It's absolutely right, Evelyn. You know, you might not expect high earners to have these problems, but if you dig a little bit deeper, they don't have any discipline either in a lot of cases.
We've seen probably more people with higher income struggling than we've seen people with lower income struggling.
Yeah, yeah. I think middle income earners probably do the best job out of all income levels, providing for their needs and for a little bit of their wants and being able to move forward.
And focused.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Discipline. If you have no discipline, you know, it's not going to work. And, you know, 68% of the people who said they had problems blamed it on dining out.
Well, we ran into that recently. We had a couple that came to us for financial help, and they were spending some ungodly amount of money on eating out. It was like over $1,000 a month on eating out, but they couldn't make ends meet.
Eating out costs a lot of money.
It does.
Especially when you can cook at home. What's happening is that there are a lot of couples that are eating. This is bad.
It was a bad pun.
Eating away at their savings every month.
That's, you know, really bad.
And if that's not enough to make you lose your appetite, we don't know what will.
What about about car loans? It seems like people get in over their head in car loans very easily.
Well, that's a magic number also. The magic number for car loans is $30,032. Now, that's not per family. That's per loan.
So if a family has two car loans, they might be up to their ears in debt by $60,000 on two cars.
It could be.
So what are the payments on that? What are the monthly payments?
Well, on a $30,000 loan, the payment is $503 a month, I think, a typical payment.
And most car loans now last for how long?
We keep allowing the dealers to entice us into more expensive cars and more expensive. And now the average number of months that a loan is in existence is 68 months. That's just 4 months short of 6 years.
And by that time, people are ready for a new car.
They've probably been ready for more than that.
But that's another problem when you turn over the cars without ever getting any equity in them.
Yeah.
If you keep turning over your car
over
and getting
and
a new car, yeah. you're yeah. just digging yourself deeper.
But just
deeper.
Think what you could do with an extra $500 a month. That would probably right most people's ship.
That's $6,000 a
year. Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. So the next number is 47%.
Okay, and what's 47%?
47% can't meet a $400 emergency.
And by emergency, you mean like the water heater dies or the washing machine croaks or...
You have a hurricane.
You have a hurricane, yes. We've had a hurricane lately, haven't we?
Yeah. So that's just... that's amazing.
So
half of the households in the United States don't have the funds set aside that they can meet a $400 emergency.
So that's basically lack an emergency fund where they just use their credit card to take care of whatever comes up. Yeah, that's a scary number.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like, well, what do you do if the car needs a $500 repair?
You put it on the credit card.
And, you know, anytime you take your car to a dealership anymore, it costs you $500.
At least.
You know, it's really bad news. And it just causes you to start, you know, you dig in the hole deeper and deeper every time you have something like that happen. So you need to set up and have an emergency fund. It's just so important. And $500 isn't a good number. You need to have at least $1,000 in your emergency fund. But don't let that stop you. You know, if you today you can put $100 in and next month you can put 50 more and next month you can put, do it.
Yeah, whatever you can
do
put
it.
Away helps.
Whatever you can sock away, and it's untouchable money. I don't know how I can emphasize that anymore. It's untouchable money.
So, final thoughts. That sounds like a pretty grim statistic that you painted for us, John. Where can we get out of this problem?
You have to shield yourself. You have to start planning. You have to keep track of what your spending is. You have to establish a budget so you have a plan. You know, you can't predict what the future is going to hold for you, but you can start saving in an emergency fund, put that money away for a rainy day, for that hurricane that comes up in your life. But, you know, whether you're in debt or struggling to pay your monthly bills or you haven't started saving for retirement, even though you've got a solid income, you know, the best time to get on the right path is now.
Today.
Do it now. You know, Proverbs 27:12 tells us sensible people will see trouble coming and avoid it, but an unthinking person will walk right into it and regret it later.
Wow, some pretty startling figures. Do you struggle with money? If you're shaking your head yes, this is where Compass Catholic can help. We have a Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. We show you, using the Bible, how to manage your way out of debt and how to maintain a debt-free life. See for yourself. Go to CompassCatholic.org, click on Bible Studies, and look at Navigating Your Finances God's Way. You'll be able to see the topics that we'll be discussing over those 9 weeks. Also on the page is a contact form. If you like what you see and you want it at your parish, fill out the contact form and we'll get back in touch with you.
Now, coming up after the break, we're going to discuss a book for engaged couples called God, Marriage, and Money. It gives couples an opportunity to speak with each other about how they intend on handling money as a married couple. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
The name of the show is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we are from Compass Catholic Ministry, teaching what the Bible tells us are the best practices for handling money. We have a small group study. It's 9 weeks in length. It's called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And if you want to view the topics that we discuss over those 9 weeks, go to CompassCatholic.org and click on Bible Study. Now, another valuable tool that we have, you can also check out on the website, is called God, Marriage, and Money. And we want to discuss that book today. This is a perfect read for engaged couples or newly married couples. And for the parents, this is a great gift for your kids. Evelyn, what was the inspiration behind the book, God, Marriage, and Money?
You know, Steve, we go to a lot of conferences, and when we're looking at the exhibitor booths, the family life type related conferences we go to always have a lot of marriage prep material. And when we look at the marriage prep material, a lot of it deals very superficially with finances, yet money can be one of the most divisive issues in a marriage. So we wrote the book to tackle the money topic so that a couple who's engaged to be married can have the money talk before it gets to be an issue.
You know, it's interesting, Evelyn, because Audra and I work on occasion with young couples that go through the pre-Cana program. And I guess there's a questionnaire they have to answer individually. But finance is always the area where there's a problem or some challenges.
Right.
Well, you know, we were just at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and the booth next to us had a lot of books. They were a publisher, mm-hmm. and they had a pre-Cana book, and Evelyn was looking at it. She was thumbing through, and she finally was probably better than 75% of her way through the book, and she finally found the finance
questions.
It wasn't even a full page. It was less than 1 8.5 by 11 page, and that was a total finance discussion in this. I don't know.
It was like an inventory, like you're talking about, a questionnaire.
Yeah, it wasn't really a pre-Cana book as such.
It was a questionnaire for them to discover. They each fill out the questionnaire, and then they compare their notes.
Okay.
But it's amazing the statistics you see over and over and over again about reason for divorce, it's communication or finance, why the church doesn't put more emphasis on finance.
I think that there's just not a lot of material out there, which is why we wrote the book specifically. We start out with what I call the tale of two couples. And there's two couples that we know of, both young couples. One couple got married and they never had the money talk. And through a series of problems and job transfers and moves, they got into financial trouble. When that happened, it drove them apart. The other couple talked about money beforehand. They were raised very differently, the two of them, but they had a way to talk about money. And when they hit their financial trouble, they jumped on it right away and solved the problem. They moved in with her parents for a while, which wasn't ideal, but they knew they had trouble and they needed to regroup. And they were able to work through their problems. And now they bought a home and they're fixing up the house and redecorating it and refurbishing it. And their marriage is much stronger because they worked through their problems together. So the first couple's divorced, the second couple's got a good marriage. So money can either be a unifier or a divider in a marriage.
And money, like in this example, can be one of the leading causes of divorce. And typically, the average couple spends more time talking about the flavor of their cake before the wedding than they do talking about money.
But the cake is so much more fun to talk about than money. I mean, if I talk to my fiance about money, I might find something that makes me uncomfortable. So it's easier to ignore it and just think that once we get married, we're going to live happily ever after and all the problems are going to go away. And it doesn't happen.
So how is God, Marriage, and Money different than the 9-week Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way?
Navigating class is done in a small group, okay, like 10 or 12 people, mm-hmm, maximum. And it meets for 9 weeks. And so in God, Marriage, and Money, it's designed specifically for just the two fiancés, the man and the woman who are going to get married. And each chapter is short, about 5 or 6 pages. And then it gives them specific questions to talk about and to answer to each other about their feelings on that particular topic.
The Navigating Study assumes a certain level of familiarity with finances. The God, Marriage, and Money book focuses on startup questions.
So what are startup questions?
Like, how much money can I spend without talking to you? How much debt am I bringing into the marriage? What's my credit score? I bet 99% of couples that are getting married don't ever find out their fiancé's credit score.
You know, you're absolutely, every couple that we've talked to, we have asked, do you know each other's credit scores? And 100% of the time, the answer is no. And the other thing that was an unknown until they got married and the mail started coming for the credit card debt, they had no idea what the other's credit card debt was.
Yeah, that's the other question we asked them to talk about with each other, was what the credit card debt is. Because you need to go into this with open eyes, or you're going to run into, it's going to hit the fan sooner or later. I mean, you're going to talk about money before you get married, or you're going to fight about money after you get married. But it's going to hit the fan sooner or later if you're not on the same page.
Yeah. What we've created within the book is we get them to talk about each other's assumptions.
Good point.
My assumption is $10,000 debt is normal.
And my assumption is if you have over $1,000 in debt, then you're in trouble.
Exactly. My assumption is we'll buy a new car every 2 years or maybe lease it.
And my assumption is we should buy a good, high-value used car and keep it forever until the wheels fall off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my assumption on credit cards is that we're not going to use them. We're only going to pay cash.
And my assumption is we buy whatever we want and just carry a balance and make the minimum payments.
My assumption is we don't really need a budget. We can just handle it. We'll fly by the seat of our pants.
And my assumption is that we need to track every penny we make and every penny we spend so that we know exactly where our money goes and we can spend it on what's most important to us.
I swear you sound like couples that we work with. This is the exact discussion that takes place in our dining room when we have the couples over. I mean, word for word, when we go through the car, the credit card, the bank account. So a couple has this book. How would they use it?
I read a chapter at a time and then talk about the questions. And we also encourage them to write a prayer intention for their marriage based on that specific topic that they were just talking about. So this isn't a small group study. It's just one-on-one focused discussion on one little part of finances that they're going to spend and they're going to tackle in their marriage.
And each chapter contains a section called Insights, where we kind of summarize the topic. We give a Bible reference for that topic, and we also quote some Catholic source about that particular topic, and then we give the various topics that they could consider related to, or the various questions, I guess, that they could consider related to that specific topic.
And then they have a place to write a prayer intention. You know, Steve, I want to go back for a minute to we were talking about my assumption. The one young couple we talked to, we were working with, that had separate accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband, I guess they'd been married maybe three or four years.
Yeah, yeah.
And the husband had a significant health issue. And he didn't have enough money in his account to pay for it. So we were in the middle of the discussion between the two of them on how he was going to pay for his health issue. And the wife actually said to him, your health problems are not my problem. And then she kind of stopped.
Wow.
And thought about what she said for a minute, like, oh, wait a minute, that was the richer, poorer in sickness and in health part of the vows. And she realized what she said, and it just turned the whole discussion around. But up until that time, it was my money, your money, never the twain shall meet. And that was an interesting dynamic to watch.
That was. And I think it changed the whole way that they viewed their finances and their the arrangements that they'd created.
Yes, definitely, because they had kept their money separate. She had her job, he had his job. They each paid for certain things, and yeah. they put some money into a joint account, but it was pretty much mine and yours.
And they talked about it. You know, I'm going to pay this bill, and you're going to pay this bill, you know, and it all worked out. Mm-hmm. Until there was a problem.
Until it didn't.
yeah, exactly.
So we want to get them talking so that they're prepared for the day-to-day.
Right.
But they're also prepared for the crisis and the what-ifs and the layoffs and the sicknesses and the emergency funds and all that stuff that can be so emotional when it happens.
We've run across some people in our counseling sessions. Now, these weren't just married couples. They've been married for 5 or 10 years, and in one case, probably closer to 20 years. But they never had these money talks, and they never resolved these kinds of issues. And so when somebody lost a job, or if they got really down on their luck, they had this standard of living that they developed, and they felt like they deserved to have that standard of living. It was pretty much the same experience that we had. We had this standard of living, and we're going to have that standard of living no matter what's happening, even if we got to use credit cards. And in both of these couples' specific situations, the one person had run up over $100,000 of credit card debt. Both couples had that kind of a situation, and the spouse didn't know about it.
I think the spouse probably knew there was some credit card debt, but they didn't know the extent of it.
They didn't know how deep it was, yeah. And, you know, when you get in that deep, first of all, what's going to happen to your marriage? You find out all of a sudden we got this huge
debt load
sitting on our back, and, you know, what's going to happen to the marriage when that happens?
If you're just joining us, we're taking you through John and Evelyn's latest book, God, Marriage, and Money, a must-read for engaged couples. The book is available at compasscatholic.org. Just click on Bible Studies, and you can order your copy today. Or, if you want it right away, you can download it right to your e-reader. That's God, Marriage, and Money at compasscatholic.org. Coming up after the break, Evelyn's going to give us examples on how couples have been using this book to open up a wide variety of discussions on finances, and they're having great success. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry, right here on Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way. We are from Compass Catholic Ministry, and today we are discussing John and Evelyn Bean's latest book, God, Marriage, and Money, a great read for engaged couples. So, Evelyn, the book has been out for a while, and how would you say couples are using this book?
We start out with the tale of two couples like we were talking about before, both young married couples. One of them talked about money, one of them didn't, and kind of what happened to their marriages after they ran into a problem.
And that can be a real eye-opener for these two couples who really haven't even thought about talking about money.
Mm-hmm.
And then they see that those two stories, and hopefully it's like, ta-da, wake up, you know. we need to have this discussion.
There you go.
The second thing is about God's role in their finances. You know, it's not just young people today who are getting married, but so many people totally exclude God from their finances. You know, they're in control. And they forget that, you know, right from the very first chapter of Genesis, the first book of the Bible, God is providing and creating. And, you know, he has a total role in our finances. And our job is just to be stewards. But God provides all these blessings for us.
And that kind of leads into the next chapter, which is being good stewards. Like you said, God blessed us with all the things we have, money, possessions, health. Everything we have comes from God, and our role is to be a good steward of all the blessings God's given us. So we challenge them to think about ways that they can be good stewards, not only of their possessions and their money, but also their marriage. It's very important for them to be good stewards of their marriage.
And that goes into the next topic, which is honesty. It's very easy to be truthful, but not 100% honest. We want to put that out on the table right from the very beginning, because it's the way you talk about things is the way that you're going to develop your marriage. And if you're totally open, then your marriage is going to end up being stronger than if you're just kind of weasel wording things around so that you get the best possible outcome at that moment.
So when the husband or the wife asks, how long have you had that? And the other spouse says, oh, I've had that for a long time, meaning a long time is like 2 hours. I can't believe you haven't noticed that before.
I just cut the price tag off.
So you're telling me that doesn't work?
That does not work. That is not a good thing.
Cultural influences can play a big part in this too, because if you're coming from different cultures, then that can present an issue for the person who's unfamiliar with that particular culture. And it doesn't have to be things so blatant as, well, I was brought up in this country. Well, I was brought up in this country. You could have both gone to the same grade school and high school, but you still have family cultural issues from, you know, your grandparents or wherever. So I think those things are important to talk through.
And it's family background as well as culture, because even though your dad and mom can both, in both families, be American, there may be influences that your parents exerted on you either positively or negatively that are going to impact the marriage.
Yeah, we actually had that situation in our marriage.
We did.
Yeah.
Making wise decisions. Now, there's a topic that would benefit a lot of people, right? We talked to them about how to make wise decisions, and that would include praying about large purchases and making sure that they take their time and gather facts, not necessarily jump into, wow, there it is, it's on the shelf, it's shiny, it's brand new, it's wonderful, I have a credit card, let's buy it. So we want to encourage them to thoughtfully make purchases and make wise decisions on financial issues.
And while they're making wise decisions, one of the wisest decisions they can make is to plan for a foundation or create a foundation, a spending plan. Another word for this is budget. You know, you have to be in control of your money. And if you have a plan, then you can basically tell your money where you want it to go. And you, if you follow that, then you know exactly where it's going to go every month. This much is going to go into savings. This much is going to go into an investment. This much is going to pay the house. This much is going to pay for food, et cetera, et cetera. And that's just extremely important, because there's so many unknowns between the two of you that you've got to have some structure. And that provides a good structure.
And a lot of people think a spending plan is just a burden, but what we found in our experience is that it lets you concentrate on spending on what's important to you. Instead of frittering your money away, you can decide what's important and funnel the money in that direction.
Yep.
Which kind of leads into the next chapter, which is crisis. We encourage everyone, including people who are engaged or newlyweds, to have a crisis budget. What happens if you're a two-income family and one of the incomes disappears? What happens if there is a sudden illness? What happens if there's an unexpected pregnancy? There's all kinds of things that could impact your finances negatively, and if you're prepared for them, it's much easier to deal with them, because you don't have to deal with all the emotions that are happening when something unexpected happens.
Good point, Evelyn. The next thing that we talk about is debt. How are you going to handle debt? There's two types of debt that you need to really discuss. It's debt that you're bringing to the marriage as a couple, and then it's debt that you might incur as a couple. And you have to figure out how you're going to handle both of those. You know, are we going to pay off all of this debt we're bringing in before we incur any debt together? Or are we just going to lump it all together and see how high we can pile it?
And one of the other things we encourage them to talk about with debt is, are they getting into debt in any way for the wedding or the honeymoon?
A big wedding, you know, fancy this or fancy that in the wedding. All you're trying to do is impress the people who are coming.
It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the quality of your marriage.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. You know, the best way to do your wedding is to be dollar neutral.
There you go.
How about that?
Credit scores. We talked about credit scores earlier. We very much encourage you to share your credit scores with each other so you have a baseline for how your partner treats money and what their attitude is about money and how much debt they're bringing into the marriage. Major purchases, John, is the next one.
Yeah. How are you going to handle things like, well, maybe you have to buy a washer and a dryer in the new apartment, or you got to buy a car, or you got to buy a house down the road? You can go from small items like the washer and the dryer to major items like a new house, and you got to have a plan. It doesn't matter how big or how small the item is that you're going to purchase. You got to have a plan for it, and you've got to have a budget for it. So it's good to talk about those things in advance.
And we cover saving and investing. Saving a little bit sooner rather than later is a lot better than trying to play catch up when you have the need for a saving. It's things like a college education for the children that may not even be here yet, to saving for retirement, to saving for a car or a house. It's important to understand the different savings vehicles there are. Now, we don't recommend any specific type of savings account or investment account, but we do talk about attitudes and the different things to look for when you're thinking about saving and investing.
What about children?
The children that aren't here yet.
Yes.
What are you going to do to teach them about money?
Well, or, you know, what's your plan for children? How many are you going to have? How are you going to fund things? All that kind of stuff.
And how were you raised with money?
Yes.
What did your parents teach you, or how did they train you to be a wise or a bad spender, and how do you want to change that for your children?
And what about estate planning? You know, you think, what do I need estate planning for? I mean, we're just now talking about getting married, and you're already talking about estate planning. Well, guess what? Once you're married, then you have an estate. And if something happens to one of you, the other one has to know what's going to happen and how to do it. So those are important questions. You're never too old to start talking about estate planning.
Or too young. And then the final chapter is forever, just kind of wrapping up what it means in a godly perspective as far as being a good steward and how all this impacts the rest of your life. And then at the end of the book, we have Bible references for each of those topics. And we also have a financial dictionary so that you have a definition for some of these financial terms you're going to be running into.
Love the topics that you have in this book. Now, tell me about some of the questions that are there for the couples to discuss. And these are at the end of each chapter, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's just there's four or five questions, and it is designed to generate discussion. That's what it's about, and to help each couple familiarize themselves with the other. Evelyn, how can a parish take this material and use it in a valuable way for the couples?
Well, one of the things we've seen parishes do is buy the books and give them as gifts to their couples who are engaged to be married. And it's a great way to tell the couple that the church cares for them, both spiritually and in more secular ways. And it's a gift from the parish that makes them think about their role as a member of the parish.
Yeah.
And they can order that from the Compass Catholic website, compasscatholic.org.
And another thing that they could do as from a parish level is to have a money and marriage, God, money and marriage weekend, or a Saturday morning or a Saturday all day, and just focus on these financial issues. And we have a prepared workshop that we can offer to the parish, and it will take them step by step through the process of having a workshop, getting these couples to, you're not going to go through the whole book, all 17 chapters in one workshop, but you're going to get it started. And it's a good way to get the discussions going and in an easy way for the couples.
It's a valuable part of the pre-Cana experience,
yes,
because this can be an area in marriage that really suffers a lot.
And we know that, you know, couples are really stressed from time standpoint in today's world, but this little bit of time of doing this preparation, this financial preparation prior to marriage, is so much easier than after the marriage and everything's caving in on top of them.
You can order your copy of God, Marriage, and Money today, or you can download it today. Go to compasscatholic.org, click on Bible Studies, and look for God, Marriage, and Money. Now, if you missed any of today's show and you want to hear it again, go to compasscatholic.org on the homepage, click on radio shows, and begin listening, or even better, share it with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we pray that you join us again for God, Marriage, and Money from Compass Catholic Ministry here on Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.